information where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.
Global or globalist? Well, that's the title I'm putting to this little talk. It's just me and the microphone this time. I'm not actually going to read from anything prepared. But I've had a very interesting chat earlier today, which I thought I'd record a little bit about straight away, rather than write an article at some future point. And I'm going to call it, as I said, Global or Globalist, after thinking of some possible titles. What happened was I went to a pub in the pre-Christmas period, a very busy day before Christmas, and I had a drink upstairs in a well-known chain pub, and the place was getting packed. I was at a large table on my own. I'd ordered some food. I was glancing at the cable TV channel, at the news wire, which is always coming on there with the BBC News 24 and the subtitles they put on, because they can't play the sound in the pub. So that's always quite a good thing to do. Anyway, a guy came in and wanted to sit down. So I said, yeah, sit down. And we got talking about stuff, which I didn't particularly want to encourage, to be honest, at the start, as is usually the case. You know, when you sit down in a pub, you don't always want to. But I didn't have a newspaper or anything on this particular occasion. And he was sort of saying this sort of thing, you know, what's it all about? Oh, oh dear, you know. It's really, well, he said, actually, typical British, moaning about the weather. Oh, it's cold out there, isn't it? Getting cold. And we start talking. Yeah, it is. You know, it's 5 o'clock on a December evening. And, yeah, we got talking and we drifted into various things. In fact, what happened was that it was a Friday evening. And I said, well, it's going to be worse tomorrow. It'll be cold because there's snow predicted. But there's also going to be a demonstration against various, not organisations, companies in the town. And I won't say where this is, because I think it can apply to many places. But companies like Vodafone, for example, because Philip Green has done a bit of a tax, a bit of creative accounting, let's say. He's not actually legally dodging any tax. In fact, he runs Topshop, no, but they're one of the companies. And Vodafone is another one, and these companies have done various bits of creative accounting, or they're based in Monaco and stuff like that, so they're not paying the tax they could be paying. And there's a lot of protesters who were, you know, the next day going to go around town on a very busy Saturday before Christmas, possibly disrupting these companies. If you don't want to be disrupted, you'll have the cold and you'll have these demonstrations. And then he kind of said, oh, do you support the demonstrations then, or are you going to be part of that? And I said, well, you know, I probably wouldn't be, not because I wasn't for it, but I've been on a lot of those sort of things in the past. I don't really want it in the run-up to Christmas myself. But having said that, you know, I do kind of support it. And but we started talking about politics and stuff, and you know, the sort of nature of local campaigning and different things. I mean, there's been the student demonstrations, and this guy said he'd been along to a student demonstration at the town hall, and this was with what we used to call pupils there, which are really, if you're listening to this in America, high school students, really, I guess up to about 16 when they have to be in school. But the government have now made it so I think you've got to be in school or work up to 18, or, you know, you've got to be in educational training up to 18. You can't leave that. And they've had this thing called the Educational Maintenance Allowance, which they brought in a few years ago under the previous British Prime Minister, Gordon Brown. And it was a payment of £30 a week, which I never got in my day, you know, for staying on at school between 16 and 18. And the idea was that, you know, it stopped you signing on the dole to get money. If you were staying at school, you'd still get some money. And the dole is just like unemployment benefit, basically, kind of colloquial term for it. But what they're now saying is, because you can't leave, you won't get this money because you can't be on the dole anyway. So they've kind of offered you the kind of carrot. And then once you've gone for the carrot, they've kind of closed the door, to mix the metaphor a bit, and said, right, you're now doing what we want. So that served its purpose. And so that's what these pupils, or students, as they now call them, which is confusing because students, you tend to think of someone from about 18 to 21, 22 at university, or a mature student, or someone doing an MA. You don't tend to think of it as someone in a blazer and tie, but that's the way it is used nowadays. Anyway, this guy said he'd gone along to this. He was 66, and he was a bit world-weary. You know, I don't know, I guess he was retired. They said he'd been around the world in the past, but he'd obviously been forming his ideas in various ways. He went along to the demo to have a laugh at the students, he said, which I thought was a bit iffy. But what was good, he said he'd been won over. You know, he came to scoff and stayed to shudder, as the headline once went for the very famous film Night of the Demon on the poster. You know, he went with a different view and he came away changed, which I thought was nice. It was very, very worrying, though, at the town hall. He said, a bunch of schoolgirls had no fear. They ran towards the police. And these are schoolgirls in, you know, pinafores and blazers. Like I said, they're proper school girly girls. We're not talking, you know, loud students. And the police apparently pulled out taser guns and were aiming at them. These taser guns could fire, it's like a wire, and it kind of sticks on you, and they can send an electric shock down the wire. I mean, they weren't used, because if they had been, it would have been national news. But and it could have been very, very dangerous for someone young, and a small person, you know, it's going to affect them a lot worse. I don't know whether you can alter the power of these tasers when they're used. But these things were waved around. And again, I'm not saying where this was. It doesn't matter where it was. And I didn't see it. But if that's true, and I've only got this guy's, his account to go by, that's pretty disgraceful, and it shows the way things are going. And of course, you know, he actually said, and I did, you know, eventually say, well, I'm a bit of a conspiracy, theorist, kind of. I didn't want to get too deep into, you know, a soapbox about it, so I kept it at a fairly simple level. And he said, well, here's a conspiracy for you. What about, you know, Prince Charles and his wife being driven into that demo or near it to the theatre, you know, so that they would get attacked, so that the police could say we need more power and bring in these water cannon. I have to say, you know, I didn't really say that I believe that or not. I kind of said, well, it's possible, but it seemed a little bit of a low level conspiracy to me. It could just as easily have been a cock up, but I did concede he didn't have a point. I hadn't really thought of that. I think sometimes when we look at massive conspiracies like 9/11 and things like that, it's sometimes easy to forget smaller things can happen that are proper little conspiracies within the agenda. It could well have been someone thought, oh, well, there's Prince Charles, let's drive him in there and see what happens. But then you'd have to get a photographer there to take the picture at the right moment. And then, OK, that photographer's going to sell the picture anyway. It's going to be a very popular picture. Or popular, you know, in terms of everyone wanting to see it on the front page. So I'm not entirely sure it would have been deliberate, but it could have been. My personal opinion, and I'm always open to, I say always open, probably not always, but I think on this one, I think it probably was more likely just a bit of a cock-up. And my view is that we're often going through a cocked-up conspiracy. There is a move to set up a one-world global government. And undoubtedly, things like ID cards were part of that. The very chip or microchip implant is very much part of it too. But I haven't actually done it yet to any great degree. And I think it's because of activism and stuff pushing them back. And they're just not quite ruthless enough in some ways. I mean, they could have been a lot more nasty and hard, but they have to kind of make it look popular too, I think. Anyway, we talked a bit more about politics and stuff. And then we got into something which I didn't expect. Talking about, you know, global power and stuff, he was sort of saying, well, what we really need is, you know, we've got all these politics, it doesn't work, because I'd spoken a bit about local politics and, you know, we don't really need to go into all that here, it wasn't anything much, but he got into stuff like we can't trust the politicians and that, you know, all these different countries that are warring, what we need is a global democracy to kind of make it all work properly. And this is where my ears pricked up a little bit, because it didn't really seem to quite chime with what I'd heard about him suggesting a conspiracy, you know, about this Charles being driven into the riot business and then saying, oh, we could have a, you know, he didn't say one world global government, he said global democracy. So I thought, I'm going to test this guy, see what his knowledge is. And I said, well, do you mean one world global government then? And he sort of undenied and kind of said, yes, that's what he meant. It'd be a global democracy. Well, I then had to say, well, that's something you can't run away from. You see, if we had a global democracy, how could it be democratic? And you could argue, what is really the meaning of democratic? You know, if you had a controversial issue, it's hard to pick an example. Let's just say an issue that is in dispute that one area wants and another area doesn't want. I'm sure there are many, many examples. But if we use an example, it starts to kind of muddy the waters a bit. But let's say there's an area of the world that has an issue which it wants a particular outcome and the rest of the world doesn't agree. You know, what do you do? This guy was saying that, well, what we do, we basically all vote on it. And if 51% of the world says no and 49% says yes, the 49% are beaten and they just have to do it, you know, do what the other 51% say. I made the point that, you know, if you have a world where you've got 51% and 49%, that's almost half and half. You know, you may as well have two countries, you know, different hemispheres, if you like, and let them do things differently. And so what? You know, as long as they're not fighting each other. And he didn't like that. He said, no, they would have to go along with it and they'd just have to vote and persuade us in the democratic process. You know, that this was the arguments that they had were right, and if they lost, they'd have to accept that. Well, you know, it's easy to sit there theoretically saying things like that. But I said, you know, this must be a different part of the country, sorry, part of the world, a different area. And that's what he said. Yes, they'll be called areas. I said, they may as well be called countries then, if these are different places with different opinions. No, the different areas of the one world global. He called it democracy. I would call it government. And he meant government, really. I mean, he wasn't really familiar with these terms. I said, had you heard of a new world order? He hadn't really. He hadn't heard of a project for a new American century. But then he kept going on about capitalism, like, oh, no, I'm against capitalism. That's just America. And I said to him, well, no, it's not. I mean, these things might be steered from America, and you can argue that they're not even steered from there, but apparently they seem to be. And that's always equated with capitalism very easily. I think too easily. I think he had a very left-wing view, a very communist view, but it had come... It wasn't kind of party political communism. It was a kind of socialist sort of reductivism, I think. I mean, we didn't get into any sort of spiritual talk here, you know. It just seemed to be very much based on there's a system, and, you know, if this system was there, we all voted within this one-world democracy, you know, we'd all be voting for each other's best interests, and so you'd have to go along with that, and that would all work fine. He wasn't thinking no one would like it or there wouldn't be conflicts. And I said, well, what if there was a group that, you know, the only thing you can do is do it through this democracy. So what if, say, a particular group said we're not accepting the result, but they'd have to go along with it. But what if they didn't, you know? Well, they'd have to, yeah, but what if they really didn't? They said we're going to fight. Well, we've got all the weapons, he said. The global democracy has got all the weapons. Well, then I had to say, well, what do you mean by weapons? You know, well, we've got the nuclear. In fact, he didn't say nuclear. He said there are no nuclear weapons, but he could just as well have said, well, they've got all the nuclear weapons. He seemed to think they would all be got rid of if you had a global democracy, because it would have no one to fight, and so it would get rid of all the nuclear weapons. And I think he had a very anti-nuclear background to his thinking, which is fair enough. But, well, he didn't seem to think, and I kind of wished I'd ask him really this, maybe the global democracy would just get all the nuclear weapons for itself and attack anyone it didn't like within its own, you know, its own body, if you see it like that. Why shouldn't it? You know, it might, you know, cut off its nose to spite its face sort of thing. There's no reason why it wouldn't do that. But this guy seemed to think all the nuclear weapons would just disappear. Well, if we think they would, and let's say for the sake of argument that they did, there's still other weapons. I mean, what's a weapon? It's a tank, you know, it's a sword, it's a fist, it's throwing a rock, you know, whatever. I mean, you could fight with anything if you had to. So again, he never quite could question the fact you'd have to enforce all this stuff. And, you know, we didn't mention global armies, but obviously this global democracy, as he called it, and I wouldn't call it that, would have to have an army to enforce these various things, because in the end of the day, if you didn't accept the outcome of these these elections held globally, then you know, you'd have to be suppressed, basically. So I said to him, well, you know, what if what are you going to accept under this system then? Are you going to accept a microchip implant? And I think he might have heard of them. And I said, you know, under the skin, if they said have that, are you going to accept it? And he said, well, you know, well, if they really said it would help everyone, it would help keep things running well, and, you know, it's for everyone's benefit and this sort of thing. And I thought, oh, no. So I gave him a bit of the other side, you know, saying, well, no, it's, you know, it's all about controlling you, and it could even be used to transmit things into you, possibly illnesses and stuff, you know. And I outlined a little bit of the New World Order canon of knowledge about, you know, population reduction and all this sort of thing, and the New World Order for the elite and this sort of thing. Not a great deal, just put a few ideas out, which, I mean, the thing was, he'd never heard of any of these ideas, and I think he was, I'd say, not exactly dismissive, but he couldn't quite accept it, you know. It was just global democracy. No, it's a global democracy, you know, kept coming back to this. And I think he thought I was, you know, he thought that I should think that what he was saying was an answer to the problem I was outlining, as if there's a new world order, which is bad. I was a campaigner against it, but his global democracy was the answer. What I was saying to him really was, this is exactly the same as what I'm talking about. What you call a global democracy is actually the new world order, you know, and it never could be a global democracy. And this is really perhaps the crux of this. It's amazing how a grown man who, you know, 66, and he said he'd been around the world and stuff, but how he could have been so gullible to think that some great big thing called a global democracy could be set up and could all be just there and wonderful and a lovely answer, and it's all happy and fluffy and kind of, you know, it sounds like a tempting answer, you know, a simple answer. I mean, I met someone years ago in a cafe who was a little bit similar. He's very socialist, and he said, and quite an elderly man, you know, once we've set up world socialism, then the real work begins. We have to work out how to divide up the railways, divide up the factories, this, that, and the other. And I just thought, and I think I said to him at the time, you know, I think the real problem, mate, might be you getting world socialism. I mean, don't just dismiss it as like, oh, once we've got it set up, then the real work begins. I think your real work might go on a long time and probably, let's face it, be impossible, you know. It's kind of dreaming, you know, it's utopian dreamers. And he did say, you know, I'm dismissed by someone the left as for my utopian ideas. And I thought, well, I'm not surprised, really. It is a fantasy, you know, because he can never quite understand that, you know, if it's a global democracy, where is it based? He said, well, there's one place that organises it all from somewhere. But as soon as I really pushed him and said, well, what if there's a local issue? Say in Australia there's a local issue that doesn't affect anybody else. Well, they can have a vote for it in Australia. Well, then it's not a global democracy. You've got areas. He called them areas. I said, well, they may as well be countries. And the point, too, that countries do protect against the spread of totalitarianism. In the end, if you've got one that goes bad, as Alex Jones said, you've got fire breaks. You know, like in a forest fire, it burns so far, can't go any further because you've got a line in the trees, a gap, basically, where the fire stops. It's not because you want gaps in the forest. It's because that's to save the rest of the forest that you make those gaps. And I think he couldn't quite get his head around that idea. It was an interesting meeting. And, you know, towards the end, I had my burger and beer. I didn't really want to hang about too long. I didn't get his name. I didn't ask it. And I didn't offer mine either. But I did say to him, you know, go and read some conspiracy books. And I gave him the name of a very well-known author and a particular, well, I just said get his latest book, basically. And it's down the road. There's a bookshop you can get it in. And I said, that may be the best bit of advice you get all year. And I don't know if he'll take it or not. I just kind of made a nice exit on a nice line like that, and it kind of left it hanging in the air, really. So sometimes these things happen. Maybe by synchronicity we're meant to meet and convey a bit of knowledge. I like to think so in that case. I mean, the pub bore can begin, but sometimes you get sucked into a conversation and you just think there's a little crack in the armour here. I could put an idea in here, make him think. Probably no one in his whole life has ever told him those ideas before, ever. probably no one ever will again. He just had that one moment to get it slipped in a chink there. He might think about it, he might think, what an idiot. But, you know, he might wake up tomorrow morning and give it a bit of thought and wander down the bookshop and pick up that book. Or hear something on the news that relates to this. Who knows? I don't know. Like I said, I didn't want to sort of associate with him any further than that moment. As I said, I left it there. And, you know, I think talking about the student thing again, maybe that's part of the kind of awakening that is hopefully going on. It could be, and it's going to be a messy process, I think. But he came, like I said, to have a laugh at them, and he was put right on that. And he did admit that. He said, you know, they kind of inspired me there. I got a bit more respect having gone down there, and I think that was a good thing. But I don't think, you know, I mean, do we have a duty to sort of say these things or not? But I think we do. If we really know stuff that we think is real, I think if a chink in the armour comes up, maybe it's meant to happen by synchronicity, and you do have a duty, I think, to not drone on about conspiracies, but just offer a little key to it. Say that here's a key. You can turn it in the lock if you want. If you don't, that's your choice. But I've offered it to you, you know. And if he isn't interested, that's fine. But he can't say he wasn't told about it. And I think that's what we have to do.
The information where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.